Our next guest on the programme is Chief Superintendent for Community Engagement, Park Jones. Good morning, Park. Thanks so much for your time.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. And we're reacting to figures published by An Garda Síochána today on hate crimes and hate-related non-crime incidences reported to the force in 2024. It's the fourth publication. I remember doing in interviews on this when we didn't really have the figures and there was some sort of online recording of it. So it's interesting, isn't it, now to be able to compare figures over a number of years, Pádraig?
It is, Greg, for sure, yeah. And I suppose at the outset, it's important to say that we do understand that in general terms, hate crime is actually underreported, and that's for various reasons. So we've seen a year-on-year increase. So this for 2024, the incidents are up to 676, which I think is a 4% increase on the year previously. And as I said, that's year-on-year since we started publishing the data that there's been increases. So I suppose there's two ways of looking at that, Greg, you know, in terms of A, that the number of incidents are unfortunately are more prevalent. But I suppose secondary to that as well is that maybe there's more confidence in An Garda Síochána in the public, particularly our diverse and minority communities, to come forward and report hate incidents and hate crimes to us.
Yeah, it's anecdotal, but sometimes you look at the figures and wonder, are they sort of aligning with, you know, online discourse or maybe just conversations that are happening around the country? Because discrimination on the basis of nationality accounted for a quarter of all cases last year. And that's up really quite significant from the 18% the year prior.
That's correct, yeah. And then above that again is anti-race, which came in at over 200, almost 300 incidents. So there has been an increase. And you're correct in what you say, you know, the discourse and particularly maybe the number of protests that we've seen, you know, have grown quite a lot. And a number of those would have been, unfortunately, you know, veering towards far-right or anti-immigration protests. So that probably has a knock-on effect in terms of people then reporting hate crimes to us.
Is it easy, you know, and law can be quite complicated, is it easy to distinguish between what a hate crime is and what a hate-related incident is?
I suppose sitting from where we are as the policing service is probably easier for us, and we would say that because it's a day-to-day thing that we encounter. But for a member of the public, if they're not sure, I think the first instance they should just report it to An Garda Síochána and allow us to guide them through that process. So we have, you know, trained practically everybody in the organisation in terms of giving them hate crime training. So there is that awareness. We've also supplemented that training with over 580 diversity officers across the country. And they're present in every division, Greg. So, you know, even in your own catchment area there in the Northwest, there are Garda diversity officers. Their names are publicly available on the Garda website. And really, the work of the diversity officer, as well as being, you know, a normal guard doing their day-to-day duties, they also engage with minority communities to address issues of concern, I suppose, to reassure them and provide equity in their access to policing services.
Do you think this reporting mechanism is known enough about in, you know, minority communities? In other words, that they know the pathways to make a complaint, be it in different languages or, you know, because it's quite possible that a lot of the people that we're talking about now may not listen to Highland Radio or may not read a newspaper as such. Maybe they still source the news from their home country or whatever it might be. You know, is there much effort put into reaching those communities that they know there is a platform for them to make a complaint if they wish?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yes, and I suppose that is exactly why we've trained that network of diversity officers. So that's a proactive response on our behalf to try and actually go out to reach into those communities and to engage with them and give them the information that they require to come forward. But I think it's something that doesn't rest just on policing alone, Greg. I think that's where we require other partners to come on board, whether that's civil society or non-governmental organisations or other representative groups that work with diverse minority communities. And that's certainly something that we do here in the National Community Engagement Bureau very regularly, is to reach out to those representative groups and try and provide them with that support. And that knowledge and awareness, of how to report. And if I could, there's also, you know, you can report hate crime online through the Garda website, but we've also worked with some of those non-governmental organisations, as I've mentioned, to create a third-party referral process. So often, as you might be aware, we have people that come into Ireland from countries where they would have a distinct distrust of the police. And that carries forward into policing in Ireland because they don't know any different. So if those people want to go to accredited third-party representatives or representative groups, we will take a report via that third party as if the person had made it themselves, and we'll start an investigation in relation to it.
I think this is arguably one of the most politicised areas of policing. How complicated is it? Because, you know, some could frame this as that you're policing the freedom of expression or the freedom to speak, for an example. Like there's a video circulating at the moment at a recent protest where, you know, a man of colour is being told to go home or to go back to where you come from. Is that, and I'm not asking you to comment on that, by the way. I'm just wondering, you know, some might say if Gardaí get involved in cases like that, you're policing, you know, someone's right to express themselves in public, or, you know, hurty words, as some might phrase it. Is it a complicated area because it's so, not the majority of the population, it is a minority, but it's a tough area.
Yeah, I appreciate that, and it is a nuanced area, Greg, and that's why we've given training to our personnel, and that's going to be actually cemented by further cultural awareness training that will take place this year for our own personnel. So that's to ensure that we build our competence and our capacity to interact with people, not just from diverse minority communities, but other communities that have expressed fears in relation to this. And certainly we are not policing freedom of expression. But I think if you were to take that back to something a little bit more basic, it's to treat people the way you'd like to be treated yourself. So if you or I were walking down a street in another country, would we like to hear the abuse levelled at us that sometimes is levelled at people in Ireland? And, you know, we will always operate within the confines of legislation, and the Hate Crime Offences Act 2024 gives a basis for that. Mm-hmm. But again, that's very well set out, and it's available for everybody to read and to examine, and it's very transparent, and it does, you know, place certain offences in the area of criminality. And our mandate and our role is to investigate crime, and that's what we'll do.
Yeah, this is just my own commentary, not a question, but I mean, obviously we're seeing a sort of a shift in the conversation on gender and sexual orientation in Britain and America and elsewhere, positively in this country at the moment, but I will take interest in the years ahead to see how the trend continues. But positively at the moment, there's been a decrease in discrimination on the grounds of sexual orientation, I presume gender as well, from 109 incidents in 23 to 70 last year. So anytime there's a reduction, obviously, in discrimination towards an individual or a group, that's to be welcomed.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. And I think, Greg, I suppose it's very important to say that in the main as well, you know, we are a very tolerant, welcoming society. And what we are speaking about here today is certainly the exception to the rule. Mm-hmm. And that I think that's important to put out there.
Well, sometimes we forget that. 99% of the population have got their own problems and just get on with life. And often, you know, I mean, as I say, 667 hate crime and hate crime related incidents is 676 too many. But in terms of even just public order offences in Letterkenny in 1 year, it's almost an equivalent figure for a nation. So I suppose we do have to keep it in context too. We appreciate you assisting us in doing that, Chief Superintendent for Community Engagement, Pádraig Jones.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Take care of yourself. Okay. Right. A caller says the new housing czar will retain his NAMA salary of €430,000. How is this amount of money justified for any one person? It's disgusting. Never mind protesting about undocumented coming into this country. Where's the protest on this issue? Well, The Taoiseach says he understands unease, as he's described it, for the €430,000 salary for the housing chief. Taoiseach Micheál Martin has said he understands public concern over the mooted €430,000 salary for the government's new housing czar, but said the overarching concern is getting houses built much more quickly. I'm not saying this is my view, but does anyone think that that almost €500,000 salary to one person is going to increase housing delivery? Given that we know what the crack is, right? So infrastructure, not enough water, not enough power, planning issues. You can't build a house in many areas of this county and elsewhere. The drawn out planning process, how things can drag through on board Planala. Are you seriously telling me some one person on €430,000 is going to be able to fix the obvious problems? There's not enough builders. There's not enough skilled workers. There's not enough electricians. Not enough plumbers. Not enough roofers. Not enough block layers. And block layers can go to Dublin and make an absolute fortune, or they can stay around here and get €2 a block or whatever it is. You know, how is a housing czar going to fix that? That's just... some might say that's just €430,000, and as well as that too, unfortunately, what we see is there's no, what is the key performance indicators to retain that €430,000? So say, for instance, we miss the social housing targets again by 18% this year or next, or that, you know, we see less new homes coming to market or less homes in the rental sector or whatever, does that person get the sack? No, they don't. There's no key performance indicators. It's lovely. I mean, can you imagine getting €430,000 a year? How do you do that? I'd love that, €430,000. And to effectively be able to do it, and there's no real way of sort of determining, you know, how you've earned it. Now, there has been on the show today sort of an accidental trend of talking about, you know, discrimination, you know, be based on religion, which we'll be talking about now in some extents, on race or what have you. And as I say, I can tell you right now, it's not organised. It just so happens that we've obviously a protest coming up in Letterkenny at the weekend. We have those figures nationally released by An Garda Síochána Síochána, and just it's one of those things. We're now moving to our next topic, and there have been appeals for calm from church leaders following a spate of incidents in Derry over the weekend, which police have described as sectarian hate crimes. Officers are investigating an assault on three young men in the Nelson Drive area, an organised fight in the Waterside area, an attack on a bus returning to the city, and a paint attack on a mural in the Fountain Estate. Police came under attack from youths throwing bricks, bottles and fireworks in one of the incidences, while a vehicle carrying two police dogs was also targeted. This is not what Derry is. It's not who the people of Derry are. And I'm sure Bishop Andrew Forrester, Church of Ireland, Bishop of Derry and Raphoe, would agree. Good morning, Bishop.
Good morning, Greg, and thanks for having me on the show this morning. I completely agree, and I want to make it very clear that these sort of incidents are absolutely not the lifeblood of this city. This is a really positive city that's come through a very painful past and is building a much better place for visitors and so on. Interesting, this week, Easter week, there were so many tourists in the city and so many things that were happening in the city, and I think that's why what's happened over the weekend and maybe in last week as well has been so disappointing and sad for us, and also made people angry that this is what's happening. It's not the lifeblood, it's a small group of people, and I just want to appeal for people to calm, to step back from this. And I've been with my Roman Catholic colleague, Bishop Donal McKeown, and we've spoken extensively about this over the last 24 hours or so.
And Bishop, is this a series of events that have happened, or is there potentially a sort of a tinderbox situation going on there? Because I don't want to either play down nor amplify the situation, right? Because, you know, I'm from outside the area for starters. But what's your assessment as to what's going on?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, actually. And what I would say is, in Northern Ireland, peace is always a very fragile thing. Now, if you have something fragile in your house, you're careful with it. You handle it carefully. You watch over it. You make sure it's okay and safe. And for us in Northern Ireland, because we still have a divided community, we need to handle our peace carefully and make sure that that peace is something that becomes more and more robust rather than more and more fragile. And I think what we've seen over the last week is the fragility of our peace. And we've also seen, well, I don't want this to sound patronising, but we've seen young people involved in this who maybe haven't experienced the pain of the past. And when you've lived through the pain of the past, you don't want to go back to that. And unfortunately, we've seen some young people involved in this who maybe haven't experienced that. My understanding, Greg, is that a lot of this has been provoked and even organised through social media. And social media, there's positives to social media, of course there is, but there's a negativity with that. There's a negative that something that somebody posts can destroy lives very quickly and also destroy the life of the people who post it as well. So my request, the request of church leaders in the city, is really for people to step back from this, to calm down, to take a step back and think about what future they really want to build and what they want to see in the life of a place that we all love.
The peace we have was hard achieved, and the peace that exists is not a given, nor can it be taken for granted either. Obviously, very quickly, church leaders have come out. I'm sure community leaders are as well. But anyone with influence, I think, now is the time to step in and say, "Okay, right, enough is enough. We don't want to be going. We don't want to be going down a road that we've been down before." You know, it took a long time for people to plan a trip to Ireland and go, "I've heard great things about Derry. It's perfectly safe. You can go up there, and it's inclusive, and it's lovely." That can be undone very quickly, because for every one of these that are reported, someone searches Derry, clicks news. This is the kind of stuff that comes up. And I don't think anyone wants that. And the wider community certainly don't.
No, absolutely not. And I think what we've seen over the last sort of 24, 48 hours is that church leaders, community leaders, political leaders, schools, education facilities, everybody is standing together saying, "This is not what we want. This is not the people we are." For me, that it may seem like words, but it actually creates an atmosphere. It creates an atmosphere of what we are as a city and what we believe we can be as a city. Because, as I said, peace is a fragile thing. It has to be handled carefully. And as a church leader, I'm called to love my neighbour and I'm called to love my enemies. That can be challenging, but loving our neighbour creates a better future. And that's what I think even the people involved in this stuff, if they look into their hearts, that's what they want.
And it's all right, me and you and people of a certain generation talking about it, Bishop. And of course, your intervention in this is significant given your position. But what we have to be conscious of too is that this conversation may not reach those who we're talking about. And when we are young, often we need an identity, you know what I mean? And there's a cultural thing to that. And what we have to be very careful of, and I think, you know, rap bands like Kneecap need to be careful of, because we've seen in the East and West Coast in the United States how music then can, you pick a side effectively. And I think, you know, it's great that people can express themselves, but I think leaders like the likes of Kneecap, and I'm not putting it on them, don't get me wrong, but when you are performing in Belfast and you're wearing a green, white and gold balaclava, you kind of have to be conscious of, you know, conscious of what impact that might have on a level down where young people feel left behind by society. The adults don't get me. You know, I want an identity. I want something to be a part of. And when I heard that some of this stuff is being organised on social media, you know, next thing, are we going to see diss videos and all that type of stuff? I do worry that we have to be careful that there's not something rumbling underneath, you know, that is actually nothing to do with traditional problems between, say, for instance, the Catholic and Protestant communities.
Yeah, I think there's always something rumbling underneath. Do you know, gang warfare, gang culture and so on has been something that's gone on not just for decades, but for centuries in many ways. But for me, my fear for the young people involved in this is this can have life-changing consequences. Mm. You know, if you pick up a criminal record at 18, 19 years old, you're not going to be able to travel as much. You're not going to, your job opportunities narrow down, your future opportunities narrow down. This has huge consequences, let alone that this is putting people's safety at risk. You know, all it takes is for one stone to hit somebody in the head and it can be murder. Do you know, for one firebomb to ignite a bus and you've multiple deaths, multiple injuries. Do you know, this is how serious this is. And you know, it's right that we condemn these things. Of course, it's right that we condemn these things. But and there are underlying issues in every society. Your show's highlighted some of those this morning. There are underlying issues in every society. But what we need to do, I think we always need to look, and I'm speaking to myself here as well, look at our better nature. Mm-hmm. What is our best self? What is the society we want to live in? What do we want to be people who share hurt and pain and suspicion and division? Or do we want to be people who love our neighbours, love our enemies, build a better future?
Well, traditionally, that's who we are.
Yeah, exactly. I think it is who
we are.
You talk
about culture and you talk about culture and identity. I mean, that is us, isn't it? That's why we've been so welcomed wherever we go, I think, in the world, because of our core sensibilities and ethos. And
exactly, Greg. And we've got to handle it carefully, because I think what we have now, particularly with social media, and I realise, you know, I'm a man in my late 50s and I'm certainly not an expert in social media or anything like it, but what happens now is that things can be stirred up very, very quickly, and people can be manipulated very easily through social media. And I just say to people, be careful about all of this. Just be careful about what you're hearing, what you're receiving, and how you respond as a result of that.
Okay, well, fingers crossed that the message gets through and this doesn't continue or accelerate. We appreciate your time, Bishop Andrew Forster. Take care of yourself. And I just want to clarify the comments I was making. I'm not in any way attributing any of this to a kneecap. I don't really know an awful lot about it, other than and what the brief bit I've read. But I do remember when I was... I was a young person, I was into sort of, I always have been sort of into hip hop and rap music and all that type of stuff. And, you know, like, it was cool. I was only, you know, 15 years of age in Lahey, for crying out loud. But you still were following the East Coast, West Coast stuff, the Reds versus the Blues in the music scene. And you picked a side, you know, you kind of like, you followed, you know, Biggie Smalls and Tupac. I think I mentioned them a little earlier on. You know, they were colleagues at one point, then they broke up and, you know, they got into the rap battles and we're going to take you out and shoot your family and all this kind of stuff. So my point being is that, you know, music can, we have to use our influence carefully. It's different when you're in a United States with 380 million people and it's commercial, but here we're small. And it's when what we need is people with influence to step up. To step up and ensure that they use that influence in a positive way. And I'm not saying that's not happening. I was just trying to give an example. Great to hear Declan Meehan speaking sensory, the misinformation and hate being spread by unsavoury people who've never campaigned for services in the county or country, pointing the finger at the wrong people. Government need to address the systems and prevent these fake patriots from hijacking every issue with their hate. Great discussion with Councillor Declan Meehan. What happened to Ireland being the land of 1,000 welcomes? We can do better. Anger is being aimed at immigrants when it should be at the government. That comes in from a Caroline there. The protest is about housing and the lack of it. It's about infrastructure and the ability to cope with all the extra people here. The only people who are benefiting are business people, but they do not live near iPass centres and wait 2 weeks on GP appointments or miss a school transport place because the bus is full with people who've never contributed to our economy. I know what you're saying, but I'm not silly either. Like, those behind the organising of these protests... not necessarily the one in Donegal, I don't know, and I put this question directly to them. You know the articles they're sharing. It's not about I can't get into my GP. It's about, you know, someone in the street with a sword, or an assault, or violence. You know, those are the stories that are being shared to motivate people to come out and march. You know, I'm not going to sit here and have the wool pulled over my eyes as well. Is it about access to a GP, really? And we all can struggle with that as well. Or is it something else? And maybe that's justification for it as well. I'm not judging. I'm just saying, you know, yeah, we have to be realistic too about what's being shared to try and promote a good turnout as well. But anyway, listen, we'll talk more about it. We'll speak to the organisers of it as well, by the way. I'm not speaking about people. We did invite one of the organisers on the programme today to ensure there was balance in our conversation with Declan Meehan there. Not saying that Declan's unbalanced, but I just want to make sure that everyone feels they're heard. But he was unavailable to speak to us this morning, so we'll return to it later in the week. But did seek a spokesperson on behalf of the protest as well, just to make clear that we're covering all. I'm really pleased to welcome into studio Anne McCafferty. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for joining us. And we also have Carmel Craig. Hiya, Carmel.
Hiya, how's things?
Anne and Carmel are co-founders of the Dayspring Special Community, which is based in the Acorn Centre in Derry. Anne, why did you believe this charity was needed?
We set up this charity because I removed my son, Sean, who's sitting here beside me.
Hiya, Sean.
Yeah. We removed him from school, my husband and I, at 13 years old, and he has been out of that system now.
Big decision. Why did you decide to do that?
Well, actually, it was an upsetting incident. Sean is a compulsive eater, mm-hmm. and he was in a small group of children and lifted a chip off a child's plate, and the teacher in question, in punishment for Sean, took the dinner off him and made him sit and watch other children.
With his condition, just the worst thing you possibly could have done to punish.
Yeah. So he got no dinner and then was put into isolation for 15 minutes. So I turned my back on that system and thought there has to be a better way forward for children and adults with complex needs.
But yours was, it might have been a better way, but not an easier way, because you chose to homeschool Sean.
Yes, definitely.
Which is a big undertaking.
Well, my background's in teaching, so I knew what I was doing.
Yeah, well, I mean, in terms of life. Oh, no,
you will find that any parent with an adult with special needs, or in our case complex needs, it is a 24-hour, 365-day, it is total devotion to that person throughout their life.
Carmel, your involvement?
Well, I was with Anne and we were chatting and discussing, you know, future plans for Sean, you know, what's going to happen, sadly, after the death of parents. And it came to pass, we sort of thought, oh, we need to look into this, we need to do something about this, because we wanted them to go from a home situation to another home situation. This was very important. And we wanted them to have that transition of knowing the people they were going to be with, the other core members who are in our club, knowing them, having fun with them, having the crack with them, being familiar with them before they made the transition into permanent home care, you know, with someone else looking after them. So it came about through that.
That's for people who care, and, you know, especially extensively like you do, that is one of the biggest concerns. What happens, you know, if I fall ill or can no longer do this? What's in place to continue this level of care? And I do wonder sometimes, and you're facing up to that conversation from what Carmel has said there, how many people struggle to sleep at night worrying about it but don't really be doing anything about it? And sometimes you can't do anything about it because there's no real pathway to what you want.
Well, we hope to create that pathway with our group, and we are collectively a group of parents together. But the number of parents I have met throughout my lifetime with Sean, and unfortunately the prayer is, we hope they die before us. And that's not good enough in this day and age. We should be able to be happily concerned about the placements that they're going to be going into. Mm. Now, we're sort of independent of the trust at the minute. Now, they're all with the trust in the sense that social services look over them. But we're making our own pathway we meet weekly at our own club. We're looking for our own premises. And we hope to develop those relationships more intensely as they get older, and perhaps build 6 or 7 cottages where they all have that familiar relationship with each other. And when a death occurs within our social group, we're all there to pick each other up. We're all sort of needy parents to everybody in the group, if you know what
like
I mean.
It's like one large family.
It is, really, it is. It's an extended family,
Carmel, obviously, like everything I discuss about caring for children with additional needs, or even to that cliff edge that's there when they turn 18 and what happens next. And even in this conversation, it's always those affected that seem to have to step in. Right. Why do we not in a civil society have this recognised as something that happens, and that it's the state that's driving things like this and saying, you know, ethically, this is what we need to be doing. Why should you and Anne have to be stressing about this?
Well, I think, you know, the state does do what it can do, and it's limited in the sense of finance and all other sorts of things. But our core belief came from, Sean comes from a very loving background, where it's 24/7 care, where his every need is sought after and looked for, you know. And because of that, we wanted that care to continue in the same mode as he was used to. So the trust can offer, you know, care. We're not saying it doesn't offer care and it doesn't offer security and all the rest. But small things like the parents know the individual things that their son or their daughter, you know, need the most. And that kind of thing we would take into account. Like, we're not going to put them into a care home where the room would be unfamiliar to them, say. The room maybe would have a lot of what they're familiar with at home, a lot of their possessions and different things that they need.
As easy a transition as possible.
It would be as easy a transition as possible.
It's not going to be without its challenges, but you can mitigate as best as possible.
This is it. And at the club, they have the crack. They really enjoy the crack. Mm. And they all know each other. We have fun and games. We have laughter. And we commiserate when there's sad times. Sadly, there has been a death of late within the club, you know, of a parent. And we know, and we're very familiar with those people, so we would hope continued support would be given. And, you know, we know the ins and outs, and so did all the core members.
So, I mean, we have to face up to the reality, OK? So what is being established, or what do you hope to establish? I know we've covered much of it now. For, you know, to care for the adults when their principal primary carer, their mom or dad or both, have passed on. So who would be responsible for the ongoing care? Is it the charity? Is it in
No, at the minute, the state, the trust would have primary care over Sean, but our group is different in the sense that we are targeting adults who need one-to-one care.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of adults with difficulties that are able to go out socially on their own or within a group, or able to go to the pictures. Our young people can't do anything without 24-hour supervision. So we specifically target those parents who sit at home worrying, I'm their primary carer. When I go, what's going to happen? Mm. This group has been brought about to provide a solution for that. Mm-hmm. That when a primary carer passes, there's another group that is ready to pick up the pieces, and that's what we're doing currently. We're hoping now to... there's no mandatory training, you see, in Northern Ireland.
I was going to ask you about that.
No,
next.
There's none, because minimally we've had members in where their carers have had less than 12 hours training to take care of someone like Sean. And we're saying, no, that's not acceptable. So one of our primary aims is to extend a carers training program with better pay, because they're not paid enough. We all appreciate that. But to train them in the way that we think displays high compassion and understanding. It's not enough. 12 hours just simply doesn't cover what it's...
No, and it's not even just the person for which they care for. I think really you're backing carers in that as well, because they want more training, don't they?
And
certainly to...
And better money for carers.
Exactly, because we're asking 100%. A lot of them.
Yeah, it's absolutely. You know, carers do a wonderful job.
They do.
Most of the carers, you know, are absolutely superb, and they do a wonderful job. But we are looking that, you know, if they got the... further qualifications. Yeah. They're given, you know, equality of pay and all that goes with it, and are recognised for the care that they provide.
Yeah. Mm. And when parents are doing this, like we're doing a lifetime of this, you know, and if I up and die and Sean's 50 or 60, I don't want to be replaced with someone who's had 12 hours training. Yeah. You know, no. I think parents, as carers, we save the industry by giving one-to-one £200,000 a year.
Yeah.
And the least they can do is say, right, you've done your job, thank you very much.
But I and just in our conversations about this, even from a Republic of Ireland perspective, sometimes I feel that's exploited in that, why do we need to invest? Because they're going to do it anyway.
Yeah,
do exactly. You know, and it's never sort of said, but you always get the feeling that that's because why else is there so many battles?
Yes.
You know, why are there so many battles?
Well, there's lack of funding and they're at the very bottom of the pile.
Yeah. And also, Carmel, you referenced lack of money. There's plenty of money about. There's
It's will. They're almost the forgotten people because they don't have a voice.
Mm.
And in a sense, we're trying to be their voice. So for anybody sitting at home that would be listening, we are a group. We are trying our best to get this up and running. And we would very much welcome newcomers. And anybody who would like to come in to us, you know, are more than welcome. We're there on a Wednesday night at seven o'clock.
To take the project further.
To take the project
to give
further.
It a voice, to give it a wee bit of publicity, because there are many parents sitting at home, not sleeping at night, going, what is going to happen to my son and daughter?
And you know what? Even to go along and to speak to people that understand.
Yes.
Because it can be very lonely.
Yes.
To understand it and see, right, okay, well, this has given me a bit of vigour here.
Yeah.
You know, what can we do?
And we are support to each other as parents.
And we would very much welcome, obviously,
yeah.
you know, the son or daughter to come with them, to meet them, to invite them in, to let them try it out. You know, there's no commitment. You could come along, meet us, see what it's like, and a cup of tea.
So just to be clear, what's in situ at the moment? And then I'll ask where we want to go. I just want the listener to be really
clear.
Well,
at the minute, we're functioning every Wednesday in the Acorn Centre on Colmore Road in Derry, and we meet there and we go out on different occasions. We go out for Christmas and Halloween, and we celebrate all those all year round. What we're looking for is to extend the programme to have, we are post day care, by the way. We're not 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock, but disability doesn't stop at three.
No. People want lives after three as well,
So we are post day care. So we would be looking to get our own hall. Ideally, we would love to have our own our car park or greenfield site, have our own social cafe inside it to give them what they're entitled to and what they love and enjoy. Ideally, we'd love to have our own bus to give them runs out every day and to have music every day and to tailor a programme around them individually.
And there are similar models elsewhere, so we know this can be done.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
There's no,
absolutely.
This isn't a pipe dream. It's just, it's will, and the will is there, right? It's just about numbers and drive. And
we need parents who are sitting at home to say, do you know what? I think that's a good idea. I'm going to get involved in that. I'm going to give that. I'm going to lend support, because everything is possible. Yeah. Everything. There's nothing impossible. Everything is possible.
And of course, too, you know, it's about adults, but you could be sitting there with a 15, 16-year-old and you're saying, right, well, what happens at 18 or 19? Exactly.
We're post-18.
Yeah, but I'm on about in terms of, you know, you need to be planning for your future as well, because there's different milestones, isn't there?
There is.
Things change in the Republic, certainly I'm familiar, at 18.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, then you start talking about the other stuff we've been talking about.
Well, we do have cross-border members in. We are looking to become a registered charity across border as well, so that we're dipping in and out to both areas
for sure.
And we also are very spiritual based, and so far as you know, that's what the premise started off with. You know, God was guiding us where we were going and what we're doing, and we still hold on to that belief.
Yeah.
But everybody's welcome. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be of a particular sect or religion or anything.
Spirituality
like
doesn't always have to be about religion either.
No.
Does
not
it?
At all.
No. Okay. How do people get more information about Dayspring Special Community? or find out more details?
Well, we are on Facebook. Good. We are on Facebook, and we do a weekly sort of run up to that. Brilliant. And all the details are on there.
Excellent. Okay, listen, you seem a great support for each other as well. Is there anything else needs to be mentioned?
Everybody's welcome, and do come along. If it doesn't suit, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if it does, you're more than welcome, and we'd love to meet
and
new members.
And even for people who are sitting at home, maybe who are quite elderly and go, well, I'm too old to do that, get in touch anyway, because we can get maybe the trust to give them a carer who will bring.
Don't self-exclude.
No. Yeah. Okay.
Brilliant stuff. Well done to you. Sean, lovely to meet you.
What do you say?
Thank you.
No, it's our pleasure to have you in, Sean.
Sit down, Sean.
No, it's okay. It's fine. Anne McCafferty, who's Sean's mum. Yes. Thank you so much, Anne. And Carmel Craig, all three of you. Thank you so very much indeed.
Thanks.
We don't curate comments on this programme. We don't sort of go, oh, no, we'll not include that. The only situation would be if it could get us into bother, by the way. But generally speaking, we read the comments as they come in, and they're proportionate to the opinion that is sent in to us. So if one group of individuals is more motivated to text than another, they might be overrepresented, or vice versa. Just to be absolutely clear in relation to that, I know people might want to think that George Soros tells me what to do or something, but it is not the case, nor would I sit in this seat if I was in any way influenced in what I could say, and Caroline would attest to that as well. The work that Dayspring do is incredible. Anne and Carmel have devoted so much of their time and energy. I really recommend anyone who has similar experiences to get involved with this incredible and supportive group. They are one big extended family. Hello to all at Highland Radio. Inad Niamh Fionnan, Phil Carroll will be holding a coffee morning this Saturday. From 11 a.m. to 2 p.m, join us to help raise funds for Cassie's bone marrow treatment. So this gentleman is saying that we must have cultural awareness, yet we have thousands upon thousands of men from a completely different culture coming into our country and are given no cultural awareness at all, which is something I would strongly advocate for. They're then put on the streets and cause issues with women and indeed younger people, even how to use a bus queue or walk on a footpath. Where's the equality in that? The NGOs and diversity groups are also the problem in a lot of cases, as people are even afraid to report or speak up. Listen, knowledge is power, education is power, and I think that's really important. A question that keeps what keeps councillors affiliated to these parties and leaders like Micheál Martin and Simon Harris, the old excuse to effect change doesn't work anymore. What kind of people are they at all? Any counter-protest on Saturday should not be near the main protest, as it could be used in an attempt to stir up trouble. Oh, but even you have people who are passionate with different points of views. So, you know, people are passionate. Greg, why are you doubting why people are attending the march? If people are suffering because of lack of resources, fear to walk the streets in their community, unhappy with the government handling of the mass illegal immigration, then they're entitled for now to voice the fear, unhappiness. Then why are you suggesting it's something else regardless of who organises it? This is the problem when people simply don't listen. That was my counterpoint to Declan Meehan. I was saying to Declan Meehan, we shouldn't be... It really is so frustrating. I said to Declan, I mean, we shouldn't be presuming why people are protesting. It was literally me that said what you're saying to me. So, you know, I find it astonishing that but I understand, I respect your point of view. I'm not being defensive, but you're saying to me what I said to somebody else. The media insists on calling the protest anti-immigration when they most definitely are not. They're anti-government. It's called, I'll get the name of the I don't know what is the name of the protest. I'll get it up in a second. I'm just trying to reflect what it's being called, etc. Let me see. Is it here? I'll try and find it here. What's it called? Of course, the internet decides to poo itself. The people are fed up, says a listener. The people are fed up with the mainstream media, and they're trying to hide it. According to RTE, Saturday's march in Dublin was an incident, not a peaceful march. And as for the clergy, they've enough trouble of their own sort out. If ever, listen, it was made very, very clear. It was made very, very clear that there was very little trouble. Right, okay, so Letterkenny and surrounding areas, peaceful assembly protest against illegal immigration. I never said it, that's what they're saying, okay? I never said it was anti-immigration. That's how they've described it. So I'm only using the language that they're using there. Right, now, the 100% Redress Party councillors staged a walkout of a special plenary meeting on housing yesterday due to a lack of engagement. Councillor Joy Beard is the one of the councillors. Good morning to you, Joy. Thanks for joining me.
Not at all. Good morning, Greg.
Right. Okay. So, why walk out? What was it? Why?
Well, I think it was really out of sheer frustration, you know. Despite repeated invitations for the Housing Minister, James Brown, to visit us here in Donegal and witness firsthand the devastation that's being caused by defective blocks and, of course, the escalating housing emergency here in Donegal as a whole. You know, there's been complete disregard to the thousands of families whose lives have been shattered, you know. We've had no engagement from him. We have not had a visit from him. You know, this is the biggest crisis and housing crisis in Ireland that we're facing here in Donegal. And time is running out for these families, Greg. You know, these houses are getting worse week on week. And, you know, we haven't time to wait on the minister to come here to see the devastation for themselves. So yesterday was about us taking a stand for the people that are living in these homes, worrying, stressed, in unsafe and unhealthy conditions, because he is not listening to our concerns. He's ignoring this crisis.
We heard earlier calls for the increased grant that was announced to be actually put in place. We're 6-7 months on and that hasn't happened yet. Beyond that, and also we're, of course, waiting on the process of the IS to be reviewed. But beyond that, what do you want the Housing Minister to be doing or coming up to Donegal to do?
Yeah, well, we've got different unique circumstances from different families here. I know you've discussed on your show, about the side-to-side bills for families with special needs. You know, as you mentioned there, the retrospective payment, that's a straightforward amendment. There's no opposition to it. It should have been through before the elections. And here we are still waiting on that to be put through. I don't think the minister understands the seriousness of the situation here. And personally, how can he when he hasn't visited here to witness it for himself? And that's what we want. We need him here now. And we need all the councillors, especially those from the governing parties, to push for the minister to come here and witness firsthand and fully grasp the situation here that a lot of us are facing. You know, we need to work together to get him here and make him realise this humanitarian crisis that's happening here in Donegal. It's ridiculous. We haven't had any housing minister in 5 years here to witness this crisis that we're facing. You know, it just shows how serious they're taking it. And that's what yesterday was about. We wanted to stand up for the people who are living in fear of these houses. And a lot of them have no hope. Financial constraints. I've been fighting for temporary accommodation. Nothing's forthcoming for these families. So we need them to see it here on the ground and hear it from us. But the lack of engagement and the lack of the minister coming here is totally unacceptable and disrespectful to everyone who has a defective home.
All right, Councillor Joy Beard of the 100% Redress Party, thank you very much indeed. Right, on a much lighter note, guess who's going to the circus? Duffy's Circus is in town, and Teresa Gillespie from Ballybuffet is going. You correctly answered that it's in Letterkenny. You've got a ticket for 6 people. What a lovely treat that is to go along on Thursday night at 6:30 p.m. It runs from Wednesday to Monday. And it's selling out quick, so get on to Duffy's Circus and book your tickets. Also going with 5 friends, Christopher Breen and Convoy. I think I'm going the same night as you guys, so we'll see you there. And Geraldine McMenamin in Manor Cunningham, you're also going to the circus with 5 of your family or friends. So enjoy. Thanks to Duffy's for the prize. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9.